Ontario artist. I gotta give him the love. All right, another episode of the Waterways Podcast, talking boat stuff with Dave Sanford. Thanks for joining me, buddy.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So, you are here at the Toronto Boat Show to work. You're the official photographer. You're all over the place. So, first of all, let's talk about that. This isn't your first rodeo. What do you think of this show compared to other shows? What are you seeing?
I've been doing the boat show for around 13, 14 years now. And it's always evolving, always changing. And coming in midweek this year, which was a little bit different for me, I guess things caught me off surprise, number one, because the floor plan has changed significantly from last year.
Yeah, you get used to, like, right, the same path. I've told someone, you know, I'm by the fish tank. You know what? It was Bob Izumi who's coming to be a podcast guest, and he was used to it being back there. So he called me, and he's like, I don't see you anywhere.
Yeah, it's, as I say, they caught me, you know, off guard a little bit because I'm wandering the floor so much, and there's a lot more zigging and zagging this year. And, you know, they've shuffled around a number of dealers, which I think is great because, you know, sometimes things can get a little bit stale. And when you mix them up, even though it might be the same vendors, it's great to have people in new spots and kind of, you know, catch people off guard a little bit as they're wandering through and thinking like, oh, I know exactly where this is. And I don't know, it gets you to wander a little bit more.
I never thought about that, but that's a good, it's just like grocery stores. They do that every once in a while, forces you to wander.
Exactly.
And then accidentally, whoops, I've bought a $2.5 million Tierra.
Right. That's the secret, yes.
I came in for some shoes, and I left with a yacht. Before we get into everything else, let's talk about what you do. So DaveSanfordPhotography.ca, is that your website?
DaveSanfordPhotos.com.
I got the first half right, the important part.
Yeah.
DaveSanfordPhotos.com. So you should check that out. There's all kinds of very cool stuff.
Thank you.
And you've been all over the place, it seems. So we'll get into the boats and the waves and stuff. Let's talk about everything else for a quick second. Like, what are some of the extreme things? You got wildlife photos, bears, whales.
Yeah. Wildlife is I guess, my biggest passion in life. It has been since I was a kid. It's the reason why I got into photography at the age of 9. And, my father said to me, I wanted to be a hunter. I was into fishing and being in the outdoors, and my dad said to me, you know, when I approached him about hunting, why do you want to shoot an animal with a gun or an arrow when you could shoot it with a camera? And the animal gets to live, and you have a fun, cool picture to share with your friends. So a couple weeks later, he actually won a camera, gifted that to me, and that's what set me on my way. And animals, as I say, I've loved animals since before I can remember, and I was always involved with sports. So animals always came number one, sports number two as far as my photography. And, you know, animals are tied in with nature and sort of, I guess, in a way, that adventure side of my photography as well.
Yeah, and speaking of sports, you also shoot for this little mom-and-pop operation, a startup called, let me make sure I get this right, the National Hockey League, the NHL. Is that right?
That would be correct. It's not the National Ice Hockey League like many south of the border like to say. I've worked for the National Hockey League for 28 years now. I've been very fortunate to spend such a long and storied career in the game of hockey. And it's allowed me to see the world just like my wildlife photography has and meet so many great people along the way. I've got my road family there. And to work my way to being... It sounds weird when I toot my own horn, but to being one of the top shooters in the game over the last 3 decades has been pretty special.
Yeah, well, what I'm learning is you got to toot your own horn a little bit, and if anyone has a reason to do so, it's you. Your stuff is stellar. And I love that the wildlife and the sports get to come together in a unique opportunity for you, the mascots game. So you'll be shooting wildlife, playing a sport. There'll be Carlton the bear. There'll be a shark.
Polar bear is my specialty. Yeah, Estee Sharky. Sharks are another specialty. Yeah, my two worlds collide. I mean, I work in the polar regions a lot, so I'm shooting on ice. All these crazy fuzzy animals that put a smile on my face and allow my two worlds to combine.
Perfect. Well, we're at the boat show. One of the things that a lot of people might know you from is the Lake Erie photos, the storm photos, those massive waves, the where everyone else is supposed to stay away, you're the guy walking past everyone leaving the water to get these shots. So we should start off by saying, do not get close to the edge to try and get these, because these are intense. So on the video thing we put up on YouTube, we'll put, you know, one or two up so people can see. But tell me about that. Like, how did that start? How big are these? How long do you have to wait? Are they all the time, or is this like the one in a million wave? Because they are wild.
They are wild. And I think, you know, the unique shapes of them and the size and where that these waves are created is what draws a lot of people to them. They've been coined my liquid mountains because they actually, so many of them do come to a nice peak. And compared to, you know, most waves you would see on a lake, they are like looking at a mountain. I have a long history with Lake Erie. My cousin, longtime fisherman, unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but he had a cottage on Turkey Point and went out of like Port Glasgow and all kinds of places along Lake Erie. So since I was a little kid, I've spent a lot of time on Lake Erie and his cottage in Turkey Point. He had all these, you know, old maps up with shipwreck posters and things like that. And we'd be out fishing and you'd see how Lake Erie would like change its personality just like a cat, which is what where the name actually comes from. Lake Erie is Lake Erie, which was coined, like, and it's spelled differently, E-R-I-G-E, I believe is the spelling of it, which comes from our indigenous culture, and it essentially means, comes from the terms, like, the lake changes its personality, like, as fast as a cat. Because Lake Erie does. It can go from super calm day to raging seas in a matter of minutes, and I've been out there when I've been caught in it, and I've witnessed it many times, so that was a fascination to me growing up, you know, that kind of weather pattern and how quickly it can change. And as I got older and I got the gear and I got the experience of shooting in the ocean, I was encouraged by my friend Warren Keelan in Australia, who was like an ocean mentor to me in photography, to take my skills and everything I learned and bring it to Lake Erie. So I did. I finally had the right equipment to do it properly. And the time of the year that you generally do it is the mid-fall, October. You might get some conditions, but the kind of prime time is November, December. And that's when you're getting these masses of cold Arctic air that are colliding with the warmer air masses from the south, and it creates these massive wind storms over the Great Lakes. We had a storm 2 weeks ago with winds upwards of 100 kilometers, and when you actually look at the wind on the radar, you can see it swirling almost in a hurricane-type form over top of the Great Lakes, which is really, really wild to see. And you do get winds that are upwards of the same as a Category 1 hurricane, like, and 75 yeah. miles an hour.
And Lake Erie, it's the Great Lakes are big open stretches. There's not, you know, it's not full of islands to break it up. And if the wind's going the right way, you have a multi-hundred kilometer stretch of winds. And Lake Erie being so shallow, it can get whipped up. And someone was actually in the booth the other day telling me about, what's the term? A sage.
Sage, yes.
And that there was a really big one in Lake Erie, probably that storm. And on the other end of it,
the west end of Lake Erie, the wind is pushing so strong, so consistently, that the west end of Lake Erie actually drops in depth, because that water is literally pushed to the east end of Lake Erie, where it rises, say, 10, 15, 20 feet. So yeah, I was looking at pictures last weekend of the west end of Lake Erie, marinas and stuff that were actually drained.
That's wild.
And then, yeah, it makes it more dangerous on the opposite end of the lake, where all that water is pushing up. And, you know, Lake Erie's shorelines are so famous for erosion, and this, you know, it doesn't help anything, especially for people who have cottages and homes and things along the lakeshore. It can be very devastating for them.
Yeah, and if anyone, you know, if you're ever out and you see that stuff, and as fascinating it would be to you know, see docks sitting on the ground, don't walk out there, because that water is going to come back.
Exactly.
It's basically a tsunami that will return,
yeah.
And you don't want to be caught there.
Exactly. It's a very dangerous situation, and even where on the opposite end of the lake where the water level's rising, again, dangerous situation. You've got strong rips, and, you know, with winds like that, the conditions are, I like to describe it as a washing machine. Especially where I shoot at Port Stanley, it's, you get water, the waves that I'm shooting on a big day are often pushed by, driven by winds in that 65 to plus 100 kilometer an hour range. So you might have sustained wave heights of anywhere from 12 to 20 plus feet. And then what I'm shooting is the double up or the reverber, the waves that hit the pier, which is at a perfect angle there, and are reverberating back out and colliding with the incoming waves. So hence the double up. So you've got two waves of the same size that have nowhere to go but up because it is so shallow. And that's where you see these wave heights of 20 to 30 feet. And people, you know, ask me, how do you measure them? I'm not out there with a tape measure or anything, or, you know, a ruler. The old lighthouse that stands on the end of the pier at Port Stanley is, if I recall correctly, it's 33 and a half feet from the surface of the water to the top of the lighthouse. And I have on camera, on video, and just witnessing with my own eyes, numerous waves breaking over top of that lighthouse. Not whitewash exploding off the pier and, you know, kind of covering the lighthouse, but waves breaking over the top of that lighthouse.
That's wild.
It is.
You know, I think that if, for a boater, that if you've never seen it, it's the exact same thing, a much smaller wave. If you go by another boat, when your wakes cross, there's that one perfect moment where your wakes hit and they go, you know, a little bit higher. It's not a straight up, if it's a 1 foot wake and a 1 foot wake, now you've got a 2 foot, but it's bigger than your one. So it's that same kind of thing. Right?
Exactly. That's a perfect analogy. In wakeboarding, that's where I use the term double up, because that's a wakeboarding move where the boat drives in a circle, comes back and meets up with its own wake. So you're getting that double up, and the rider can boost himself or herself, you know, essentially twice as high with a much larger wake.
I know
so
there's no
very similar.
Okay. Well, I know there's no boats out there. There shouldn't be in those conditions. But it's a good proof point of how big the water is. That's not going to happen. You know, you generally aren't going to see that in July and all that kind of stuff. But this is big water that deserves respect. And there's no more dramatic way to underline that than your photos, I think.
Well, thank you. And yeah, you use the word respect, and that's what I always say. You have to respect the water. It doesn't even matter if it's a puddle. Like, I mean, you fall face first in a puddle and knock yourself out, puddle's going to win. And when you're in bodies of water like Lake Erie, when they become raging, or the ocean or a river, water is the most powerful force on our planet, and it's always going to win. So you have to know your limits and when to say when, and when you look at, like I do it, I'll look at a body of water and say, this is beyond my skills. This is beyond, or this is just foolish for me to go in right now. So always be aware of your, you know, your own capabilities and what those conditions are doing. And it's the same thing around icy waters as well. You know, while we're talking about Lake Erie and the Great Lakes, you often get this time of the year, the ice volcanoes that form along the shore, and people like to go out and explore them. And that's a result of constant waves pushing and pounding the shoreline. And then again, you get the ice that builds up. It goes underneath the ice, has nowhere to push but up, and the ice explodes through a hole in the ice, and essentially you get these little volcanoes that might be a few meters high all along the shoreline. People might want to go out and take a closer look, but that ice could give way at any time, and if it does, you're falling through the ice and underneath it, and there's no way nobody's ever going to be able to grab you. So I always, you know, the PSA, public service announcement, don't go out exploring the ice caves because it is dangerous.
Yeah, well, that leads perfectly into what I was going to ask you, that, you know, we're not saying this because I'm trying to protect your photography and your artistic skill, but this is one of those don't try this at home. So how, you know, there are other people that want to take these photos or try to. There are amateur photographers or professional photographers. What are the key, like, how far away are you and how do you stay safe? Because when I think of myself as an amateur photog, but like all of us, you can get lost in your viewfinder and you're focused on your subject. You don't see the peripheral. And then if you're by the water in that case, like, you know, a wave, and as you're saying, it only takes one and water's always going to win. So how far back are you and what are the key sort of safety things if you're shooting a storm?
So when I'm in the water, which to be honest, I haven't done in a while because it's sort of, I've reached that point in my age where physically things are breaking down. I've had a tough few years with my physical health, and I've proved what I can do there. I don't feel the need to prove myself that way anymore. It is dangerous. So that being said, if you
so are you actually in the water for some of those sheds?
Yeah, like, I put on an 8mm wetsuit, booties, gloves, Vaseline on my face, a hood. I wear a life jacket, like a diaper, put my legs through the armholes and zip it up backwards, and that's on my waist. And then I'll wear another life vest over top on my chest, like a normal one. So I'm very buoyant. So if I am going to be pulled under by a rip or get caught off guard by a wave, I'm not staying under long because I'm so buoyant, especially 8mm wetsuit and two life jackets, a buoyant water housing. My Aquatech water housing is buoyant. So I take all these precautions. I always have somebody there to keep an eye on me as well. And then I don't go out crazy far. Like, it's a shallow lake. I don't really have much control if I can't touch the bottom. So I like to be up to about my chest height, where I might be bouncing up and down off the bottom, and I have to continuously duck dive the waves that are kind of smashing into me and coming from the side, because they come off the pier and everything. And so they kind of come from three different directions around you, and you're just battling them. And I'm still shooting waves that might be upwards of 75 to 125 feet away. Those are the ones I'm looking for to shoot. When I get out of the water, I will shoot from shore, but I'm always, you know, again, dressed for success. I'm bundled up. I'm wearing hip waders. I've got layers underneath. I've got, you know, waterproof gear over top of all my winter gear and everything. There are often days when the conditions that you're shooting in are in the minus 20s and feels colder, even with the wind chill factor, when you've got winds blowing, you know, 60 to 100 kilometers an hour in your face. You've got sand blasting, and so you have to protect your gear, you have to protect yourself. And I like to be at the water level, so again, I sit right at the edge of the shoreline, and I will let water literally wash up and over top of me. So that's why I'm still wearing waterproof gear. My camera's all covered and everything. I'm using a longer lens, but I'm trying to get as low and as close to the action as I can. And if you are paying attention, yeah, I've see lots of people kind of get swept off their feet, or they're sitting on a stool, they get swept off their feet, and, you know, have to, I've seen damaged cameras, and I haven't seen anybody get washed out. But even shooting from shore, you, like you mentioned, you just, it's crazy conditions, and things happen very fast. And if you're just concentrating looking through the back of a camera, you're not aware of your surroundings all the time, so you have to really be aware. And I just try and prepare as best I can to be aware. So when things like that happen, I don't care if I get wet. All I got to do is hold my camera up higher. And lately, too, I've been exploring and using much longer focal lengths of 800 to a little over 1,000 millimeters, and shooting those waves from different areas along the shoreline, because I'm just trying to find a fresh new, you know, vision of what I've been doing now for 9 years there. So just trying to mix it up and make things a little bit different. So
Well, speaking of different, was it 2 years ago that crazy ice storm? Well, it was, well, yes. I don't know if you call it an ice storm, but it was all the spray, and it just was nonstop with these winds. And it, how thick was it? There was some ice photos. Was that Port Stanley?
That was Port Stanley. I mean, it happened a lot of places along the shore of Lake Erie, but the pier at Port Stanley was sort of the center focal point of all of that, looking like the gates of hell, really, with the way that the ice layered on it over a three-day period, and how dark it was because the water is so shallow and gets so churned up. So much sand is in that water, so it's like a gray, dark, you know, it is. It was almost evil-looking, and it was just pounded by these winds in around 70 to 80 kilometers an hour for 3 days straight. And it was freezing instantly. Like I was like the Iceman. Everything I was wearing was freezing instantly. I could only turn the camera and take a quick couple photos, have to turn it back, put warm, hot microfiber cloths over top of it, the lens, to be able to take my next series of photos. I've never seen anything like it. The pier hasn't been there forever and ever, but I had lots of people that approached me that have lived there for 70, 80 years saying they'd never seen anything like it. And it was December 23rd, 24th, 25th of last year. Not, shouldn't say last year, but 2023. 2022, sorry. yeah, it was surreal. It was I was there to watch it in the beginnings, and then came back the next day to see, like, holy smoke, this is wild, because icicles just going sideways, like parallel, and these jagged edges, and all the light stanchions that go down the pier, and the gates of the pier, as I say. It did. It really looked like something out of Lord of the Rings or like the Gates of Hell. And
yeah, it looked CGI
it
almost.
Did. It was really, really surreal.
Yeah.
And it made for some really wonderful photographic opportunities. And again, it was one of those things where when I was out there the first day, there was nobody in sight. Sort of like when I started doing it in 2015, nobody in sight. And within a couple of days, word started to travel and... there was people out there in the hundreds to look at it eventually once the, you know, the weather cleared and it was a milder day and things weren't as crazy. So I was in the right spot at the right time once again and in the beginning of it all to see it forming and going back each day to capture the moments as they unfolded.
That's wild. All right, well, before we let you go, it's not always wild times and crazy storms and gates of hell on the Great Lakes. There's a lot of good times, and that's what most of the boaters here get to experience. Everyone loves photos. Most people just use, you know, their cell phones these days. There are some with, you know, the DSLRs, but it's sort of taken over. But even still, give me a couple key tips. If I want to take pictures of my kid or someone take pictures of their grandkids, what do they need to do or remember so... they stand out? Obviously, we're not going to have your gear, but there's got to be some things we can do to get better photos.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an Apple iPhone user and an avid one, and they take beautiful photos. All smartphones nowadays do. But when you're on and in or around the water, that's just in itself already adds to a beautiful image. I've always said photos around the water just... you know, you get the light reflecting and filling in shadows, and it really is a great starting point. You know, if you got lots of color, involve that color. You know, make it a nice poppy, summery image, and always kind of be aware of where the sun is around you. You don't want, unless you're looking for a silhouette, make sure that the sun is always behind the photographer, lighting up your subject. Just because it's cloudy, don't put the phone away. Those are actually some of the best days to take photos. It's the way I look at it is you have like a nice giant softbox in the sky, so you don't get harsh shadows and things like that. Again, morning, early morning, the golden hour, you know, and sunrise, and then at sunset, I always like to have the camera out, especially around the water, because whether it's the people or the scenery, it looks absolutely stunning and beautiful. And you know, for people, often fill your frame and you know, like, just pause for that moment before you take the photo. Take a second and just think about, what is it that I want? Do you want that big, beautiful scene that's behind them? Or are they holding up a fish that they're super proud of, and you just want to kind of fill the frame with that? So always just take a moment to pause before you take a shot, and you're going to get a better photograph.
Yeah, I was just going to say that that's my advice if I've ever seen, you know, family taking photos, and I would, you know, what are you taking a photo of? So, you know, here off the islands, if you're anchored off Hanlon's Point, which is a popular spot for boaters, and kids are swimming or standing on the swim platform, you're either going to get a great photo of the kids smiling, or you're going to get the whole skyline in the background. It's not likely that you're going to get both. Mm-hmm. So you're going to either have tiny kids or you don't get the whole skyline. But what is it, the one that you're going to look at more? Probably the smiles.
There's nothing wrong with getting both. Like, I mean, it's like my wildlife. I always say showing animals in their environment, you know. You don't always have to fill the frame with the animal. Show the environment that's around them. So if you have time to, if the kids are jumping off the back of the boat, get them, you know, tight and close and everything jumping off the back of the boat. If you have the means and can get in the water and shoot it from a different angle, a unique angle. Low angles are always great with kids and animals and boats. And if you know, a little tip for people who do have an iPhone, and I believe Android now, there's a thing that I use called the Access Go, which is a very affordable little water housing that you just put your phone in. If you're worried about it, they are splash proof, which is amazing, the cameras themselves, and I've taken mine underwater. I don't recommend it, but with this housing, it does a really beautiful job. Like, you can get a pistol grip trigger for it, and you your camera's safe. You can take it underwater, take it in the pool, take it on the boat, keep this in the boat, and you've always got it available to you. And I utilize mine a lot in the summer times, especially with my nephew around. My brother-in-law does the same thing, because it just adds another level of ability to what you can do for great photos when you're out boating and at the cottage.
And so one of my pet peeves, so my extensive photography training was one class in high school and one in university, but I just love doing it. And it frustrates me when I see people at night, especially at Toronto Islands, they want to get a picture of the skyline or something. I go, hang on, I got to turn my flash on. That's not how it works. The flash has to hit your subject and come back to your camera, so it's not going to do something a kilometer away. Keys to a good night photo so they're not blurry or blown out.
Yeah, as you say, tip number one, turn your flash off, because as you say, that flash is only going to go a few feet, not across Toronto Harbour. In most smartphones nowadays, you can put your camera into night mode. So put your camera into night mode. I was just actually with a group of people leading a tour up in Yellowknife and doing a little seminar on night photography of the Northern Lights. And that was tip number one. Put your smartphone into night mode, and you can actually touch the screen and drag your exposure up and down. And you can also change the length, so the length of that exposure. So if it's a really dark night, you can rather than have a second, you can have 3 seconds. Stabilizers in the phone are so good now. If you can, use a little mini tripod, but if you can't, just a steady hand, and the phones are so good now that you're still going to be able to get a sharp image. Another little trick, if you have a couple people around you and you want to light up your foreground a bit, and those people have a smartphone, ask them to turn their light on. Stand on either side of your subject, and then you can illuminate your subject and still get some of the ambient light in the background.
Right, because the flashes are pretty harsh.
Flashes are pretty harsh. Design. So, yeah, I like to use, or a headlamp will do the same thing. But, yeah, that's a little trick that I like to use as well, just to fill in some of those harsh shadows, is if you have two people, get them on either side of you and kind of cross-lighting to fill in those shadows. Like I say, the smartphones are so brilliant nowadays that, that from the stability of them to the ISO speeds and the quality of images you can get at night. If you want to show all the beautiful bright colors that are around you, I recommend keeping that flash off and just using any ambient light source that you have available.
I like it. Some good tips. If you are going to take the storm photos, stay safe. Don't go alone. Be prepared for it. The best bet, though, is go on the longer focal length. Don't start at the shoreline. This is definitely a do not try this at home kind of thing. Well, I'll let you get back to it. Thank you for spending some time. Good luck with the NHL All-Star Game and that mascot game.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks. Perfect. Thanks again for having the chat with me. And thank you to this amazing crowd we have here today, Bob and Sharon.
Great crowd. And if you want to see some of these photos and stuff for sale, DaveSanfordPhotos.com.